Want some great tips that's going to help anyone in Gen Z or anyone at all manage their money? Stay tuned for a great money talk with Mark Bolton. You know, we don't talk about money enough. It's a topic that gets ignored for some reason, even though it plays a role in everyone's day-to-day life. This issue is what brought Money Talk with Skylar Fleming to reality. I know you're probably busy and don't have time to research and learn about all the things that go into personal finance, but that's where this podcast, Money Talk with Skylar Fleming, comes into play. I'm your host, Skylar Fleming. I'm here to do the research and learn about all the things that go into personal finance. The goal is to simply get us talking about money, so let's get talking. Welcome to today's episode of Money Talk with Skylar Fleming. In today's episode, we're going to have a great money talk with Mark Bolton, author of the Gen Z Money Manual, and he puts a lot of effort into becoming an expert for Gen Z and helping them manage their money. We're going to be talking about some great topics like unique financial challenges that Gen Z has, how Gen Z uses technology to manage their money, side hustles, generational differences with money, and how investing early is going to help Gen Z the most. The money talking points for today's episode are, what is your favorite takeaway from today's episode? With that money talking point in mind, let's get right into today's episode. Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's interview on Money Talk with Skylar Fleming. Joining me today, I have Mark Bolton, and we're talking all about managing money as a Gen Z, and we're going to give you some great tips to help you manage that money. So, Mark, thank you for joining. Would you go ahead and introduce yourself to everyone?
Yeah, good morning, everyone. I'm Mark Bolton. I'm a kind of a Gen Z personal finance expert. I spent my career in banking, and I wrote a book over the summer all about personal finance with Gen Z. So looking forward to talking with Skylar.
Awesome. Thank you so much for that introduction, Mark. I'm excited to have this conversation. I was really excited when I saw you online to talk about some ways that we can help Gen Z with their financial challenges. So let's just jump right into the questions.
Sure.
What are some unique financial challenges that Gen Z faces compared to previous generations, and how can these shape their approach to money?
So I think the biggest one right now, Skylar, is around the cost of living. It's just a huge challenge for everybody, and particularly, and I say everybody, I mean Gen Z, and particularly around housing. So this hasn't been a problem for probably a couple of generations. Millennials kind of were okay with it, and my generation, Gen X, before were okay with it. But this feels now like a real problem for Gen Z. So there's some really clever financial hacks that people are doing. They are subletting pieces of the property that they're in, whether they're renting themselves, so they're effectively subletting, or whether they own a property, a home, they're renting rooms and pieces of their own real estate out. That's one way of bringing in some extra income. Sharing, which is a more friend-based approach, and there's a bunch of websites that support that. And then, of course, people are still living at home with parents or with other family members, effectively at a discount to the market price, in order just to have a roof over their head. But it's the number one area of challenge right now for Gen Z.
I think it's pretty interesting that you say they're having to do all these different hacks and side tricks to have a roof over their head. Is that unlike any other generation?
Yeah, pretty much, because this is on a wide scale. But the different, I think one of the differences is that you're not seeing a big homeless Gen Z population. That's not happening, thank God. The whole homelessness issue is something else, and we're not going to get into that. But it's definitely different, apart from the homelessness problem, from these previous generations when, bluntly, housing was more affordable. And I'm talking about, this is in the US, but also it's a global issue. I mean, it's the same in many of the European Union countries. China has big challenges right now with the price of homes and real estate there. So this is not just a US issue. It's a global issue for Gen Z. Dealing with it, coming into the workforce on, you know, sort of starting level incomes and into a housing market that's crazy expensive. So, yeah, big challenge.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to shape how they handle their money. It's going to shape in 30, 40 years what they're doing with housing, of course. It'll be really interesting to see.
Yeah, and I think things will resolve themselves. Excuse me. start that over, you can cut that. I think things will resolve themselves because we're starting to see interest rates, I think, peak. So they'll roll over. Now, that's not a massive issue in the US because a lot of mortgage holders are on fixed rate mortgages, most in fact. But in other jurisdictions around the world, they're not. So that will definitely help. It will bring the overall price of real estate back. Incomes are continuing to rise, but have obviously been rising more slowly than rents and the cost of buying homes, both from a price perspective and a mortgage perspective. So I think it will take a few years, but things will come back into sync. They usually do. They go in these cycles. It's just this is an extreme part of the cycle, emphasizing the gap between incomes and housing costs and really giving a huge affordability squeeze that's hitting Gen Z particularly hard. So I think macroeconomic things will help. And then Gen Z is a smart, resilient generation. I will say that. They are fiscally conservative, economically thoughtful. They're listening to people who, hopefully like myself, are giving some good advice and helping steer them in the right direction. And they're doing generally smart things. So I think they'll come out on top. It's just going to be a little bit more pain for a couple of years.
Well, that's good to hear. At least there's a little bit of hope on the other side that they're going to come out on top.
I think so, yeah.
You say Gen Z is really smart. And I think part of that is the technology changing. There's a lot of tech out there that these people are using. How can technology help Gen Z with managing their money?
Yeah, there's a ton of great tools out there. So Gen Z, digital natives, grew up with iPhones and smartphones in their hands, which is awesome. So there's everything from kind of boring online payments and banking services right the way through to smart investment tools, which all the big broker dealers have offered, but also there's a bunch of fintechs that offer investment products. But then I think probably practical day-to-day stuff, there are a bunch of websites that will compare and contrast different financial products for fees, for interest rates, whether they're on the investment side or on the borrowing side. There are also tools out there. I talked about Mint, which is now probably going to be demised, actually was part of the Intuit product suite, but Mint is a product. Rocket Money is another one where you can hook up all of your bank accounts and credit card accounts and start to track your spending and build a budget that allows you to get things under control. So if that's a challenge, then there's those two tools to start with. And there are other ones as well, but they're really cool at just automating everything, bringing it in. At the end of the month, you can look at what you spent versus what your income was, start to make adjustments. Remember, data or information is then the knowledge to be able to do something about and adjust your behaviors to get your finances back into balance.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. That data is your knowledge to be able to make the adjustments. And if you don't like budgeting or managing your finances, those tools make it super easy.
They do, because they provide kind of there's no spreadsheets involved. They can do everything. Now, when you get more mature with the tools and more sophisticated, and you want to do kind of like forward projections, I do it for myself, I do it for my business, then you're probably going to need to, you know, go over to a spreadsheet, but you can just dump all the data straight out of these tools into a spreadsheet and off you go. And I do that every month. But the tools are great just to start with. They will start to get you in control of your money. So definitely research them and use them.
Yeah, Mint is, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, so one other thing, people often worry about security. Tools that come from big companies like Rocket Money is now a big player. Mint is part of the Intuit group, which are big, big players. You can be pretty assured that your data is going to be safe. So if you connect your bank information up, that data is safe. And the technology that connects your bank data to the platform, to the tool, is pretty secure as well. There's Plaid and a bunch of other ones. I'm not going to go into it, but it's reasonably safe to do it.
Yeah, if security were a huge concern, these companies would have, I think, fallen a long while ago because it's financial data.
Yeah.
You mentioned Mint. It is going away as far as I'm aware, or they're moving it to Credit Karma or something like that. But
they are.
Everybody,
yes.
If you just search online for a Mint alternative, everyone's grabbing at the bit to try to get you on their app. So if you used Mint or you wanted to use it, there's a lot of good alternatives out there. Just thought I'd mention that one.
Yeah, thanks, Skylar. I don't have those names at my fingertips. I know Rocket Money, but I'm sure there's plenty of others now as well.
Yeah, Monarch Money is one that's going really big on advertising about switching from Mint. There's a ton out there, so I'm sure you can find one. But let's turn our focus towards side hustles. Side hustles are becoming very popular. They're something that a lot of people are doing. How does this impact Gen Z's financial security and potential?
Well, we've always had side hustles. In the old days, it was a paper round. Or a dog walking business or a bar job. Fortunately, things have got a little more sophisticated now, and side hustles today are really an entrepreneurial and a business activity. So the wonderful thing about the internet over the last 25, 30 years is it's opened up a world of business opportunity. Yes, it's extremely competitive because the internet is a democratizing force, but those opportunities exist. They are low cost to get into, relatively straightforward, pretty frictionless kind of experience to start some kind of a side hustle on the internet, whether it's selling goods or services, spare time that you have, or doing kind of packaged products or packaged projects. So you, for example, if you're in the marketing space, you might do some social media work on the side for a kind of fixed price. If you're a product designer, you might do some product design work for fixed price on the side. There's all kinds of options, and there's some great tools and platforms that you can join. Beware though, some of those platforms will reduce your relationship with the customer. I won't say they take it away, but they reduce your relationship with the customer. So you need to be a little bit careful. But nevertheless, they bring you into a marketplace where there are lots of customers. So yeah, side hustles are very cool options today.
Yeah, you say they reduce that relationship a little bit. It's like it's hard because you just turn into kind of a customer service form where you're like just flipping the product for the website that they're on kind of thing. So yeah, make sure you're establishing that relationship. They don't like it when you take the conversation off the platform, so be careful of that stuff. But building your own
the approach I would recommend is use one of the marketplaces, whether it's, you know, name names, whether it's physical goods like Amazon or digital goods and services through something like Upwork or Fiverr or any of those other ones, plenty of them, right? Use it to test your business and build your business model, build some customers and test what works in the marketplace. And then if you get serious about it and the side hustle becomes a full-time business, start your own website, figure out where you get your customers from and build that away from the platforms. But start on the platforms. They're a great training ground and a great place to find early customers and test your business model and products.
Wow, that's a fantastic recommendation. I am curious, if someone is only doing side hustles, about their financial potential, can someone retire off of side hustles, or are they going to have to turn it into some bigger form business like you were just recommending?
I'm not aware that many people can retire off of side hustles. So I think, we're in an era, I've actually always lived this way. It's been always been my career, but I've always had multiple income streams and options, right? It's been part of my career the whole time. It's becoming increasingly common to have income from a number of different areas, usually closely related in your life. So you're still exploiting your core skills, experiences, and passions. But there may be different types of incomes that are coming in. One or more of those can be dominant at any point. And, you know, when you're going through your 30s and 40s, which are very expensive periods in most people's lives because you're buying your home for the first time, then you may couple up and start a family. And so you suddenly go, you know, your income doesn't go up. In fact, it usually goes down into the household and suddenly your expenses go up. So 30s and 40s are very expensive. So you usually end up concentrating around a good old-fashioned job. And look at a job as it has concentration risk, but it also provides you that core income that's just going to come in month after month, year after year, while you go through those expensive parts of your life. Side hustles around that are great, providing you can manage it time-wise, which is often a challenge in your 30s and 40s. But once you get beyond that and the kids start to grow up and leave the house and you're into downsizing, then you get into a situation where you can explore side hustles more comprehensively and maybe pick one of those over the day job and do something else. And you can take that into retirement. So there's an amazing flexibility that exists today that was really challenging even 20, 25 years ago. And I think it's just a great, time to be around doing work.
Yeah. Awesome. I think the key thing you pointed out there is flexibility. These side hustles are going to give people opportunities.
They are. Yeah. But just to go back to the question you asked at the core of that is, can you turn a side hustle into a job? There are certainly ones that people do this all the time. Yeah. Whether they're trading goods or trading services, you've got to remember that if you're selling your time, there is an absolute cap on how much you can sell that, how much you can sell of your time. There's 168 hours in a week, and you don't want to be selling all of your 168 hours. So you end up moving away from selling your time and packaging it into products or projects or services in blocks and saying it's $25,000 for that block of deliverables and value. And that's how you start to scale and grow over time and getting away from selling your time by the hour. But in your early, in the early stages of your career, that's very difficult because you don't yet have the skills or experience or the credibility in the marketplace for someone to say, sure, I believe you can do it. Here's a check. Here's a purchase order for $25,000. You end up selling your time. So it's just a natural progression. It comes after you've been doing what you do for a few years.
I think that'll help people in Gen Z just remember to be patient. Like, it's going to be a natural progression, like you said.
Yeah, I do think it happens quicker than it ever did, Skyler, and that's a good thing. I mean, it was always, typically, it was always 10 plus years before you could ever be in a position to kind of, you know, if you worked in a career for 10 years, 10 years plus, and you start to be in the position where, oh, I might start my own business and I can sell my skills and experience rather than my hours. That cycle is shortening, and that's a good thing. And Gen Z is very entrepreneurial. They're driven by, I don't want to get too much into it, but they're driven by a couple of thoughts. And one of them is that they've seen over the last 15 years, two major economic crises. First, the Great Recession, 2008-09. Then we got the pandemic and all the impact of that. And they've seen both governments and large corporations really kind of fail the average person, or at least let them down quite poorly. So Gen Z is very self-reliant, very entrepreneurial. They do not trust that either big government or big business will be there to support them through any part of their lives. And they're prepared to take their own financial life and responsibilities into their own hands. And I think that's a great thing.
Fantastic. That's really awesome to hear. Let's talk about Gen Z versus previous generations. What are some ways that Gen Z is handling money differently than previous generations? And let's start with the good ways first. Is there stuff they're doing that's better than previous generations?
Yeah, I think when the researchers talk to Gen Z in detail, and I do through my work, but I'm talking about really, really detailed research, they have found that Gen Z behaves and has attitudes most closely to what they call the silent generation, which in the US was the generation that experienced the Great Depression of the 1930s. And it made them very financially conservative. They saved money. They were thoughtful and careful in their spending. They were always aware that another Great Depression might just be around the corner. So they behaved accordingly. And Gen Z is much closer to that than, say, millennials or Gen X. So that's a really good thing. But it combined with, as I was just saying, a quite entrepreneurial spirit, because there's just this lack of trust in big government and big corporations to really support them in any meaningful way. So they're prepared to take matters into their own hands and do things themselves. That's quite different from millennials and Gen X. Also, Gen Z is investing early. The median age of starting investing as a Gen Z is 19. That's the youngest ever. We've never seen that, which is a great thing, because one thing that will put you in a place for early retirement is the power of compound growth. Just let it do its work in a sensible investment strategy. So that's a really good thing. And I think the other big factor's just gone out of my head, but there was another big factor. When I think of it, I'll come back to it.
We can come back to it. Let's
but there's a number of significant differences there.
Well, that's good to hear. I love the investing earlier one, but there's got to be some bad ways as well, whether it's with some of those attitudes or mindsets, but what are some of the bad ways they're handling money?
Yeah, I mean, there's a tendency to be a little bit impulsive in spending, particularly in the social commerce world. That's kind of TikTok and Instagram driven spending, where an influencer will be pushing a product, and then there's an immediate kind of link and drive to go and buy that product. There's a little bit of an impulsiveness there. I'm not that worried about it. They're more, it's certainly more impulsive than the boomers are, or Gen X, who will, you know, they'll look at it, they'll save it, they'll think about it, they'll maybe come back to the video that they saw, and they'll research the influencer, and, you know, they go through this whole long potential buying cycle and then don't buy. So whereas Gen Z will tend to jump in more if they trust the influencer and want the product and it's in a price point that they like, it can be a bit dangerous. Credit card debt and behavior is actually probably better than millennials. Not seeing any big challenges there. There is one area in the US that's particularly challenging, and that's education debt. So student loans and anything related to the cost of education being put on debt. That's a big challenge in the US. The rest of the planet doesn't really have that. But here it's a big issue. The flip side of that is that Gen Z, and this was the other good point I was going to make, is Gen Z show a higher propensity for learning than anyone else. They've got the lowest high school dropout rates. They've got the highest graduation rates from colleges that we've ever seen in any generation. So it's kind of to be expected that they're spending more money on education because there's more of them in it for longer. Mm-hmm. It is an investment, but that is a definite challenge. And I think I write in my book extensively about looking for good value for money educational options. Okay, and in fact, I'd encourage people to think at either end of the extremes. Either go Ivy League and accept it's going to cost you $250,000, but you're going to come out with an amazing network, and you're going to go and work for a Wall Street bank or Google, or honestly, start community college at low cost and do it from and live at home and start there. I think the challenge is in the middle, kind of where you're paying quite a lot for smaller private schools or well-known state schools, but you're not necessarily getting either the big reputation, nor are you getting the cost savings. So that's an area to think about carefully.
Awesome. I love that insight to maybe avoid the middle potentially of those colleges, but to, yeah, consider one way or the other. I like that a lot. Awesome. One of the things that you talked about in your good points was the investing earlier and earlier. I want to touch on that a little bit more because it feels like people are starting earlier and earlier, which I think is fantastic. What potential does this starting early have for those in the Gen Z camp?
Yeah, I mean, as I said, I think more than anything else, it's the power of compound growth. So I give an example. I did sock away a few thousand dollars when I was in my early 20s in my first job, and I kind of stopped contributing to that particular plan. It's grown to over $300,000. I just left it alone, and it just worked its magic. So compound growth is a magical thing. The reverse is true, which is compound negativity around debt. So if you've got credit card debt, you've got to be very, very careful. Mm-hmm. Okay. Cause I can suck you down, but we'll talk about the positive sides. So on the investment side, so Gen Z where they're joining the workforce and their corporate employer offers a 401k, we're seeing high take up straight out of the gate. First job, they're using 401k savings. They're getting employer match as well, where that's available. So that's a really great thing. I was at a product launch a couple of weeks ago in New York of a new product that's available outside of a 401k, which is called a target date fund. So you can say when I'm going to be retiring, and then you can buy this product, this one and done mm-hmm. one-stop shop product that will then change its strategy year by year to hit your target date retirement date or target date, as they call it. Those products are now coming into the marketplace, and they're going to be amazing because they're available outside of 401k, and typically they were not. So there's other products coming into the marketplace as well to support early investment. And just across the board, Gen Z shows a real interest in investing. You know, they played around with crypto, and that's fine. You know, get your fingers burned a little bit, but not too seriously. But learn about trading, learn about active investing. And I think it's an interest and a lifelong skill set that positions a lot of Gen Z for financial success over their lifetimes.
Fantastic. I love that. Yeah. I've heard those target date funds called the best thing ever. If you don't want to mess around with your investments, you just put it there and you'll be okay. There's certainly better ways to learn and do better, but they're a great product for people.
They are a great product. You can, you know, you should be putting 70, say, not make recommendations or give investment. I'm not giving investment advice, but if I was 22, I would put 75 to 85% of my money in a target date fund, which I can just forget about. And then the other 15 to 20%, I could be more actively trading myself, knowing that if I got it horribly wrong and lost some of it, it didn't make that much of a difference. So that will be my personal strategy if I was in my 20s.
Put the majority of your money in something simple that you can just leave alone and you'll be okay.
Yes. Yeah.
Fantastic. Let's talk about you a little bit. Talk about what you're working on and what you're doing. What is the Gen Z Money Manual? What does everyone have to learn from that?
Yeah, I'll just show it very quickly. It's available on Amazon. It's Gen Z Money Manual. It is a one-on-one guide. It covers all of the landscape that you'd expect running through. I actually start with talking about understanding, setting some goals and doing some basic planning for your own life before you start worrying too much about the money. Let's get some basic foundations laid and aligning those goals with your core values. It's an exercise I did 30 years ago and I've kind of stolen it from another writer. It's an awesome exercise and it's in the beginning of the book. Then I go through credit card debt management, student loan debt management, side hustles, cost of living, credit score management, scams and taxes. So all of the big areas that you're going to want like a primer in. And that's what the book covers. It's very interactive. There's a ton of spreadsheets and other models and tools that we've been built that go around it that are available on the website. So it's a really good interactive book. I'll show you once more.
Awesome. Check out the Gen Z Money Manual. It sounds like something that'll be really helpful. Where can people contact you if they have questions or want to follow up on something?
My website is the best way to get a hold of me. It is mark-bolton.com. That's mark-bolton.com.
Awesome. Of course, it'll be in the show notes and the link to your book as well. So, Mark, thank you so much for coming on. This has been a great conversation. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Skylar. Real pleasure to meet you and be here today.
Today's episode has a lot of potential with a lot of impact, especially if you're in the Gen Z camp. I know there's a lot of challenges coming our way, whether you're in Gen Z or not. There's a lot of things going on in the world right now that impact your finances. The biggest thing and biggest takeaway for me is the power of starting early, which moves us right into the money talking points. What is your favorite takeaway from today's episode? Mine is how important starting early is. If you can get some money into your 401k or IRA early, you're going to be much better than someone who doesn't put any money in right now, but makes a higher salary down the road. Compound interest has the ability to flip that script, to make it so that the less money earlier makes more than the more money later. So get started early. It's going to be super powerful. I've already talked about this a million times. I think it's so important. Check out some of my recent episodes, like the one with Paul Merriman from a few weeks ago, or there's a couple episodes on simple investing. Be sure to search in your podcast player or on YouTube for those great money talks. But let's wrap up today's episode next. Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. There are some changes in the works for Money Talk with Skylar Fleming. I've been hinting at it for a few weeks, but it's coming. It's coming right up quick. Coming next week is going to be a great episode all about gift cards, just in time for Christmas. So make sure you subscribe and stay tuned for that one. But speaking of Christmas, make sure your budgets are in line, make sure they're in check, avoid credit card debt especially. You don't want to be paying for Christmas come June with a 25% interest rate. So go back and check out my episode from this last summer where I warned that Christmas is coming. And if you're feeling a little behind this Christmas, consider it your moment of change where you need to start planning for next year's Christmas. Because guess what? It's going to come again in 12 months. So make sure you're prepared for Christmas next year. But thank you to everyone for listening. If you could please share with a friend, I would greatly appreciate it. Also, be sure to head over to YouTube and search Money Talk with Skylar Fleming, where you're going to be able to hear and find about some of the great changes coming soon. Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Skylar Fleming. I'm your host, Skylar Fleming. Have a great week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Skylar Fleming. This show is provided for informational and entertainment purposes and may not be specific to your unique situation. Please be sure to do additional research before making any financial decisions.